For the past 5-6 weeks, I've been doing Pirkei Avos with a group of young women in North Woodmere here in the Hirschberg house. So now I'm going to pick up where we left off on that instead of starting from the beginning of Pirkei Avos again. So we're going to start with Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, and the goal will be to do one Mishnah a week, and we'll see how far we get in each Mishnah. So Yeshua ben Prachi v'nitai Arbeli. If everyone's got a Pirkei Avos, if you have a sitter, you have a Pirkei Avos. Yeshua ben Prachi v'nitai Arbeli kiblu mehem. So Yeshua ben Prachi, we're going through in the first Perek of Pirkei Avos the chain of the Masorah. So the next generation down is Yeshua ben Prachi v'nitai Arbeli, and they were mekabel the following. So we're going to have one Mishnah of the teachings of Yeshua ben Prachi, and the next Mishnah will be the teachings of Nitai Arbeli. So Yeshua ben Prachi Omer Aseh lecha Rav. We're seeing a lot of this, that people have three inyanim that they want to teach about. So there's got to be some connection between these three inyanim. There are two types of connections you want to make when you learn Mishnayos like this. One type of connection is between the author and the three inyanim that he's talking about. And the second connection is you want to make a connection between the three inyanim, you know, with each other, like what they have to do with each other. So, off the bat, two out of these three are very much connected. I say are about relationships, a superior and inferior relationship and a parallel relationship. Is not really about a person in your life, it's just about your ben adam la'atzmo. It's about just how you, or your ben adam la'chavero, but not in a chavero in a singular sense, just about how you deal with people and what your general outlook about people is. So that one doesn't seem to fit as neatly as the first two with each other. So let's learn a little bit about your Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi, and we'll see if anything jumps out at us in terms of his life story and who he is and his experiences that may have led him to teach these things. So we know a couple of things about Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi from throughout Shas. The Gemara in Sota Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph tells us the Maisa with Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi is it's missing from many Gemaras, that one time Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi was sent to he ran away to Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim when Yanai HaMelech killed all the Chachmei Yisrael. So he ran away to Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim, which is also interesting that that's where he chose to go, the one place in the world that you're not allowed to go. I guess they thought they'd never find him there. So there's only an Isra in the Torah to go to Mitzrayim, to live in Mitzrayim. But that's where he went. And then when there was a Shalom between Yanai and the Chachmei Yisrael, because Shimon ben Shetach was able to arrange that, Shimon ben Shetach was the brother-in-law of Yanai, so he told Rabbi Shimon ben Prachi it's safe to come back. So on his way back to Eretz Yisrael, he stayed in an inn, and he was being accompanied by a Talmud of his, and he started to be Meshabeach, the host and the wife of the host, and he said how wonderful this achsanya is, they're so nice to us. And he had a Talmud with him, and the Talmud's name was Yeshu, and Yeshu said to him, the eyes, the woman's eyes are all messed up. So he said, Rasha b'kacha ta'osek, you're looking at the woman's eyes. Sometimes, you know, I play, when my talmidim will go out on a date, I'll say to them afterwards, what color were her eyes? They have no idea. Like, they wouldn't even notice if I asked her, like, what color her hair was. What was she wearing? I don't know. She was wearing something? Totally clueless. So this is what you're looking at? You're so vain that you're looking at her eyes the whole time? So, b'kacha ta'osek, that you're being mistakel b'nashim? So he put him in chayrim right away, and every day the Talmud came back to try to be matir the nidui, and one time he was ready to be matir the nidui. He was ready to take him out of chayrim, but he was in the middle. But he was in the middle of being kari kriya shema. So he made a motion with his hand. He did like the Israeli, he did something like that with his hand. And the Talmud thought that he was shooing him away and that he's never going to forgive him. And the Talmud went off and started the Ovid Avodah Zarah and was machti asarabim, and that was Yeshu. And Rabbi Shimon ben Prachi felt bad because he never intended to do that. So there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim. Is that the Yeshu? That's Yashka? That's the story of Yashka? Or does that even fit historically? Did he live at the right time? That he would be the one that Rabbi Shimon ben Prachi... But whoever it was, it wasn't a good story. Meaning the Talmud clearly felt abandoned by Rabbi Shimon ben Prachi. And he felt that if Rabbi Shimon ben Prachi wasn't going to talk to him, there was nowhere else to turn. Like, there was nowhere else that he could go. Second story we know about Rabbi Shimon ben Prachi is a Gemara in Maseches Menachos and Daf Kuf Tes, that he used to say, it wasn't a story, but he used to say that anyone who would tell me, Alei Ve'elu gedula ve'hiye nasi, that you should take a position of authority, you should become a nasi, I would have tied him up and I would have put him in front of a lion and I would have had him killed, because that's the last thing I want. But now that I became nasi, anyone's going to tell me not to be nasi anymore, so I would pour boiling water over him and, you know, and burn him, because it's so enticing. Once you taste it a little bit, once you taste the covet a little bit, it's very hard to run away from it. So, and then we find that similar idea with Shaul HaMelech, the Gemara says. Shaul HaMelech was nechbe el hakelim, that he's, they want to anoint him as king, you can't find him anywhere, because he was so humble, he wasn't interested in anything. And then, when there's a threat of David taking over, so he gets all neurotic and nervous that David's trying to take away his malchus, and he goes to the nth degree to try to stop David from doing anything to him. So you see that that's a person's attitude. A person, we don't understand the type of recovery until you taste it a little bit. I remember as a child, as a teenager, always hearing like these, seeing Mamari Chazal or hearing Musar Shmuzin about Redifas HaKavod, and people want Kavod and Kavod, and it didn't mean anything. What's Kavod? Why would that be even enticing? But then you become an adult and you see that people are small. That people love Kavod. It's just something, it becomes a Yetzer Hara. I don't know what age the Kavod gene kicks in, but I don't know at what age it happens that, like, if you're not seated at the table you want to be seated at the bar mitzvah or the chasna, that you become insulted, or like if there's a mistake on the place card that you become insulted. But at some point that kicks in. At some point Kavod really, really matters to a person. So Rabbi Shimon Prachya said, you know when it matters? When you taste it. When you're given kavod, then to lose that kavod becomes a major loss. So those are the two things that we know about Rabbi Shimon Prachya. So what does it have to do with these things? So first of all, Aseluch HaRav is that a person should have a Rebbe, but that has to be together with Kneiluch HaChaver. It has to be together with the fact that you have someone else that you could turn to, that when you're not figuring out what the Rebbe's saying, when you're not figuring out why he's turning you down, so the Chaver can advise you, the Chaver could be Mechazik you, because the Rebbe's not always going to be there to be Mechazik you. Sometimes you need Chaverim to be Mechazik you also. And maybe that was a reaction to what happened with Yeshu. Maybe if he had a chaver and if he wasn't all alone, the chaver could have said, no, maybe the Rebbe didn't really mean that. Sometimes you have a Talmud who gets all insulted because the Rebbe said something, or he interpreted something the Rebbe said, and he didn't mean anything. He wasn't even really paying attention. He didn't know that he said something that was hurtful. And it's only because the chaver is there to help out, to say something that he would that he's going to make things okay. And Avidonis Kala the Mekav Schus also, you would imagine over here that was something he passed immediate judgment on this Talmud Yeshu, whichever Yeshu it was, whoever it was, he passed immediate judgment on him, and that's what led to this terrible outcome. What does it have to do with the desire for kavod? So generally speaking, if a person has a Rebbe, if he's a Aseluch HaRav and he's Kneiluch HaChaver, that also tends to help a person avoid that taiva for kavod, avoid that desire for kavod. Meaning a person desires kavod when he feels he deserves it. If a person has a Rebbe that he reveres, that he views as someone very special, so he's not going to feel that he's deserving of any kavod. Meaning when a person is exposed to gadlus, a person sees what a gadol b'torah is, so it makes you feel very small, in a good way, a good kind of small, but it makes you feel very small. It makes you feel like you're not so interested in kavod. So, but beyond that, just what these words mean, what these different bits of advice mean, Aseluch HaRav, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that Aseluch HaRav means you should have a Rebbe, meaning as opposed to just learning from everybody. But on the flip side, the Mishnah also tells us, Ezu Chachama lo meid mikaladam, that you're supposed to learn from everybody. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah reconciles that stira, the mixed messages we have. Should I have a Rebbe or should I learn from everybody? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yates, tells us that it depends. When you're learning halacha, you learn from one Rebbe. But when you're learning svara and pilpul, you're learning ways of thinking and ways of approaching things, then you should learn from as many Rebbeim as possible, because different when you have have different types of brains that approach things in a different way, you have different modes of thinking that you can learn about. And that's, you know, halacha, you're just going to get confused if you learn from different rebbeim, because you'll end up doing things that are an actual stira one to the next. So you should have a mahalich in halacha. But everyone's brain is different, and your brain is not going to be exactly like your Rebbe's brain, so you want to expose yourself to as many different ways of thinking as possible. The pasuk says, "Vayakei it's shasal al palge mayim," that it goes in all different in all different directions. And then kenei l'chachaver, Chazal speak about in a whole bunch of places about chavrusa, that this is not just stam, that you should have a good friend, that you should have someone to tell you when you're doing something wrong, someone who puts you back in your place. No, kenei l'chachaver, this is eitzah in learning, that you should have a chavrusa, that a person shouldn't learn by themselves. The Gemara says that Torah is nimshal le'esh kod vare ke'esh nu'um Hashem, that ma'esh eno dolik bi'chidi, an esh is lit not by rubbing two stones together, not by with one stone. You can't do it, you're not going to be able to light a fire. It needs to have two things that come together, so the esh, the ritcha d'oraisa, is only going to come when there's give and take. If a person is learning by himself, you don't have that energy, you don't have that ritcha d'oraisa, you don't have that esh that we so admire and we so value when it comes to learning Torah. They say the Maisa that I remember when I was in. When I was in yeshiva, when I was in Karen Biavna, I wanted to learn one Seder a day by myself, and I asked my Rebbe, I asked Rav Silver if that's okay, if I can, and he told me a story with Rav Huttner. He said that when Rav Huttner was a bachur, he in Slobodka, he was learning all by himself. And the altar came over to him. The altar was like a father figure and also a general and also, there aren't enough words to describe what kind of, he was a malach and also, a drill sergeant and also the most loving grandfather, and also he was everything to the Talmidim. And the altar came over to him and said, you can't be learning by yourself. Why you need a chavrusa. So he said, I learn much better by myself. No, you need a chavrusa. So I'm going to come back tomorrow, you have to have a chavrusa. So he came back the next day and he saw Rav Huttner was still sitting there by himself. So he said, did you find a chavrusa? He said, yeah. So he said, where is he? He said, I'm learning with my Yetzer Hara. That's my chavrusa. So he said, if you're going to pick a chavrusa, at least let it be your Yetzer Tov. Why does it have to be Yetzer Hara? He said, because my Yetzer Hara is so much smarter. I want a stronger chavrusa. The Yetzer Hara is much smarter. So it was a joke. I mean, Rav Huttner can't, but you have geniuses like that sometimes that just can't learn b'chavrusa. So the Achronim point out, learning b'chavrusa does not necessarily mean that in the classical sense of learning b'chavrusa. It means that you learn in the context of Beis Medrash and you have who to talk to in learning. That you shouldn't just think that you can figure out all the svaras yourself. That you hack around the Beis Medrash. You have a question. You go and you ask somebody and you talk in learning with other people. That also counts as learning b'chavrusa. Not only that, Rav Avadia Yosef points out in his commentary to Pirkei Avos over here that even if you learn b'chavrusa, you could chazer alone. That when it comes to committing things to memory, sometimes you're better off doing that alone. Danas Kalad Mkavskhus, we have so many Mamari Chazal about being Dan Mkavskhus, Mamari Chazal with stories. I'll just close with one story because it's already almost matter of time. It'll take 1 minute. The story goes that in the days of the Gra, there was a king that was hosting a debate between the Karaim and the Chachamim, where the Karaim wanted to argue that they are the legitimate original Jews. And there was this guy that the Jewish community had sent to engage in the debate. Rav Avadia Yosef quotes the story, and the Gra, he was trying to get out of doing it. The guy didn't want to do it. And the Gra said, I see that you're just trying to get out of it. And the guy said, no, I'm nervous, so I'm not going to do well. So the Gra gave him a bracha, because he was choshed b'ksherim, and he wasn't adam l'kav schus, he gave him a bracha. But the guy was so nervous that you were supposed to take off your shoes and wear only your socks when you walked into the melech, and you're supposed to leave your shoes in the hallway. So he took off his shoes, but he was so nervous, he walked into the king carrying his shoes in his hand, and everyone else took off the shoes. So the Karai said, look at this guy. He's such a mechutzav. He walks in carrying his shoes and saying, he didn't even leave it in the hallway. So the guy said, he just thought very quickly and he said, oh, it's because I have a tradition that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Shol Na'alecha Me'al Raglecha, that you have to take off your shoes by the burning bush, he took off his shoes and he put them aside, and he went to the sneh, and then when he turned back to look for them, his shoes were gone, because it turned out the karayim stole his shoes. So I know that I'm with karayim now, so I don't want the karayim to steal my shoes. So the karayim says, that's ridiculous, karayim didn't even exist till 1,000 years later. So the melech says, debate is over, the karayim are not the true Jews. So that's the story Ravadia tells about Don Lekav's Chus. It doesn't really have anything to do with Don Lekav's Chus, but it's a funny story. Okay, we'll have a marvel.